Well, it is indeed a privilege to be with you on this Thanksgiving Sunday. You know, this is not really a church liturgical holiday. It's an American celebration. You Congregationalists may have some historical memory deep in the culture about pilgrims and all, right? Well, I want to talk about this event, which is religious too. It's just that we have to dig a little to find the religious roots of Thanksgiving. On the altar, depending on where you're sitting, you may or may not see it clearly, but there is a cornucopia. I checked with the church this week. Church didn't own one. I couldn't find one. I checked at College Hill, but in the email that went out, it mentioned that we were looking for a cornucopia. Four offers came. Thanks to the Learys, we have a cornucopia there filled with the fruit, and this one showing the shape of the cornucopia. It is a Latin word. It means horn of plenty. Cornu is Latin for horn. It's really in a horn shape, and copia comes down into English as copious, plenty. It's the horn of plenty. It's defined as a goat's horn overflowing with fruit and ears of grain that's used as a decorative motif emblematic of abundance. That word has come up several times in today's service. Joseph Campbell, the scholar of comparative religion and mythology, discusses the Greek mystery religions. He says that those Eleusinian mystery religions of ancient Greece and the classical world tell us something about this, and you see in your bulletin the contemporary word from Joseph Campbell. He says, the deity in this tradition is frequently pictured with a cornucopia, the bounty of our life in his keep. The notion that it's out of the darkness of the abyss that life comes is an important mythological motif. This was symbolized in the agricultural cycle of harvest, death, the planting of seed, the plants coming to life again. In other words, agricultural imagery was used to render a spiritual message. We don't know a lot about the Greek mystery religions. They didn't write anything down. That's why they're called mystery religions. It was a secret society. But some artifacts have been uncovered, among them several vases. And in one of the vases, there are depictions of the ritual of the Greek mystery religions and the harvest festival. It shows what has to be the priest holding up a sheaf of wheat. Now, Campbell says that Clement of Alexandria, an early Christian writer, mocks these Greek mystery traditions and says, what a silly thing to have the culminating moment be that of the elevation of a stalk of wheat. Yet the culmination of the Roman Catholic Mass is exactly the priest elevating the wafer of wheat. And you often see it in Protestant services in the consecration prayer where the bread is elevated. In some Christian theologies, it's supposedly the prayer of the minister that consecrates or makes sacred the bread. But in the Greek mystery tradition, they understood that the bread is already sacred. It is the sacred gift that comes to us out of the abyss and mystery of nature that sustains us in our life. Campbell says, at Eleusis, the central cultic object was the wonderful food plant, which nourishes our physical life. And when consumed with the understanding that it is a divine gift, it nourishes our spiritual life as well. The food is already sacred, even before we bless it with grace or any prayer. Out of the darkness and the mystery of the abyss of nature and the divine come the gifts of life, and harvest celebrations acknowledge that. How far back do harvest celebrations go? Well, we don't know, but we can surmise, scholars tell us, that they probably go back to early in the time of settled agriculture, which evidence indicates goes back to about 10,000 BC. It's as we move from a hunter-gatherer society to an agrarian society that the harvest festival emerged in gratitude for the gifts that sustain us through the winter. There are, of course, Jewish antecedents to our Thanksgiving celebration. The festival of Sukkoth, S-U-K-K-O-T-H, as it's transliterated into English, or Tabernacles, the Feast of Tabernacles. What? I hear you say. Well, the Feast of Booths could be seen as the Feast of Huts, H-U-T-S, or tents. It's reminiscent of the wandering of the Jewish people in the wilderness and the temporary shelters that they had in that journey. The harvest celebration of the Jewish people featured either in Jerusalem, on the road to Jerusalem, or for those who couldn't go up to Jerusalem, a lean-to, a hut, a shed, by the house in which they placed the grain and other harvest fruits as part of the celebration. It's temporary. Why not a permanent place? Well, don't you know the fruits that come out of the cornucopia are themselves transitory? They don't last. You must use them appropriately. There is that cycle. And one must preserve in various ways the fruits of the harvest in order to sustain one through the winter. I don't know about you, but I remember grandparents canning peaches and tomatoes. Nobody does that anymore. We go to Dillon's, right? But there's something about home-canned fruits that is wonderful. And you can still go to farmers' markets and find essentially homemade jellies and etc. The festival of Sukkoth, or Tabernacles, the Festival of Booths, was to celebrate the incoming harvest. At the annual cycle of harvest and festival remembrance. That's really the religious antecedent to what we think about with the pilgrims. It's deep in the Jewish religious tradition. It's really deep in the human cultural tradition, because it goes back, as I said, no doubt, to early in our life as farmers, where we are sustained by the fruits of the field. Well, we also have a couple of Old Testament passages that speak to this issue. The first from Exodus: "For 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh you shall rest, even in plowing time and in harvest time, you shall rest. You shall observe the festival of weeks, the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the festival of ingathering at the turn of the year. That's the festival of Sukkot, the feast of ingathering of the harvest. So we see this going back, indeed, to the Pentateuch and the Jewish scriptures. I particularly like the passage from Ecclesiastes. Go, eat your bread with enjoyment, and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has long ago approved what you do. Let's leave aside original sin for the time being. And let us celebrate the gift of life, the gift of the harvest, and enjoy. What we need, I'd like to say this is my phrase, but it's not, an attitude of gratitude. You see, as Campbell said, it is, as in the Greek mystery religions, the bread is already sacred, the wheat is already sacred, but when we consume it with the understanding that it is a gift to us from God, it is a gift to us from the mystery of nature, that the things that we require for our sustenance come to us in a form that we can use them. It is, in fact, if we take symbolically the gift of wheat, that powers our body and our brain and gives us the consciousness to be able, with understanding, to give thanks. It powers our words, it powers our music, it powers our gratitude. So we are called upon to respond with gratitude. I also like Meister Eckhart. I've seen a banner at College Hill Church at one point that said this: if the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would suffice. That's the core response to the gifts, not just of the harvest, but of life itself. And so, a challenge. I'd like to issue a challenge to you. It's been referred to in various ways here. However you celebrate Thanksgiving, whether it's a family event, whether you're with friends, whether you're alone, eat your bread with gladness and drink your wine with joy and express your gratitude. Find a way to talk about what you're grateful for. That could come at various times. You could do it at grace before the meal, going around the table, everyone sharing something that they're thankful for. Unless, of course, there are so many people that the gravy would get cold. Then all gratitude would disappear. You could do it if you have a glass of wine or champagne before the meal, before you come to table. You could do it over coffee with dessert. Or some other time. It's not the point of time that's important. It's that you do it at some time. The fruit doesn't last. And you know what? Finally, we don't last. This is our opportunity to express our gratitude so that it will inhabit us as we embrace it. Savor the moment. Enjoy. experience and express your gratitude. If the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough. Please stand and let us sing together our choral benediction. And so this week, as you go forth into your observance of Thanksgiving, remember the cornucopia, that out of the abyss of the mystery comes the sustenance of life. And remember, if the only prayer you ever share is thank you, that's enough. Go in peace. Amen.